ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
At a rural picnic spot in the dark, a young man suddenly disappears.
You could nearly say an alien took him away because he's just vanished.
When more clues from that night surface, something doesn't sit right.
It's nonsensical where the stuff is. It's been scattered.
I'm Rob Bergen. Join me as I investigate what became of Jack in the new season of Unravel.
Is it a murder? Is it someone just gone missing?
You know where my son is.
Search for the Unravel podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello there. Yes, it is Global Roaming with me, Geraldine Doog, and I'm delighted to return to an AUKUS episode that we did as part of our big AUKUS series, which I think really, you know, was quite a classic in its own way. And we're going to bring you back as part of that series a very important, I think, conversation between Malcolm Turnbull, the former Prime Minister, Sam Roggeveen from the Lowy Institute, who's been a constant commentator and is writing very interesting work about what AUKUS means, and Richard Marles, our current Defence Minister. As you know, AUKUS has very much been in the news of late because we've learned that we're actually going to get a sort of changed delivery from the United States. All the boats we're going to get, the Virginia-class, are all going to be, as it were, second-hand used boats rather than one new and two second-hand. And just to remind you that this is quite a long debate, which with probably a lot more to come. Here they are, three gentlemen playing a very important ongoing role in this debate. First, we wanted to hear from a couple of AUKUS sceptics who do question whether this deal benefits America more than us.
Hi, I'm Sam Roggeveen, Director of the International Security Program at the Lowy Institute and author of The Echidna Strategy and a long-time critic of AUKUS. For the first time since the Second World War, the United States will be able to conduct combat missions from Australian soil, and that means that those facilities at Tyndall and at HMAS Stirling, they will be targets. The big question that I don't think has ever really been addressed by this government or the last one is, what do we get in return? And is that worth it? Do we get a whole lot more security in return for that? And I don't think we do. We don't get enough in return for that extra risk that we're carrying, because we're actually proposing to get ourselves involved in military conflicts, which are unlikely to be, I would say, vital national security interests for Australia.
Is it too blunt, Sam, to interpret from what you're saying that we're spending all these billions of dollars to essentially create more targets?
We're certainly creating more targets and creating more risk for Australia, yes. So, no, we've always been a target, right? So Pine Gap, for instance, is always, it was assumed, was a nuclear target for the Soviets during the Cold War. Now, on balance, we said, well, that's worth it because we get protection from the United States. No one has stopped to ask the question, is this still worth it? Is this bargain still in our favour?
The bargain with the United States.
It's not. Exactly, the bargain with the United States.
Okay, argue the point strongly.
Well, it has to be worth it if we think that America, being the most powerful nation in the Asia-Pacific, being the dominant power in the Asia-Pacific, is vital to Australian national security. I would say it is nice. It is certainly a good thing for Australia if the US is the most powerful military force in Asia, but we can easily survive and we can do just fine if America is no longer the most powerful military force in Asia. So what the government has calculated is that Australia cannot be secure unless we have the US on our side and unless the United States is the biggest military player on the block. I argue that it absolutely can be, and therefore we shouldn't be taking on these kind of risks.
So hang on, are you saying we should just go it alone, Sam?
The thing we have in our favour is distance. Australia's single biggest strategic asset is distance. Beijing is closer to Berlin than it is to Sydney. And distance protects us because the further away your enemy is, the harder and the more expensive it is to direct military force against them. So the actual job of projecting significant amounts of military force against Australia would be extremely difficult, even for China. In fact, even for the United States, which is by far the most powerful military in the world.
And so, Sam, can I ask you, what might be a plan B? Like, if you're right, and this is not value for money, and that we actually, and by what you've said, we're sort of almost saying we're investing in the US to keep them here, who could we partner with? If they didn't turn up one way or the other, and we had to rely on ourselves and our region, like, how would we do that? I think that is exactly the question I get asked. You know, when people talk to me, they say, but we couldn't defend ourselves. We just couldn't.
Yeah, well, the nice thing here actually is that the Chinese themselves have provided us with a blueprint about how we do this. So about 30 years ago, the Chinese embarked on a strategy that Western analysts came to call A2AD, Anti-Access Area Denial, which is to say that they wanted to make it impossible for any adversary to operate ships or aircraft around China's vicinity. And that is a blueprint that Australia could adopt. And in some ways we are. I don't think AUKUS, the submarines in particular, are consistent with that strategy. But in some ways we are adopting a denial strategy. That is, building a military which makes it far too costly and difficult for any adversary to operate ships and aircraft hundreds or even a couple of thousand kilometres to our north in a military contingency. That is an affordable and an achievable strategy for Australia.
Are there other scenarios that you think the politicians or even the military strategists are thinking about that these nuclear-powered submarines might be useful for?
Yes, I think they're thinking about Australia effectively offering the United States a supplement to the Pacific Fleet. So by the middle of the century, the Americans project that they will have 66 nuclear-powered submarines in their fleet, nuclear-powered attack submarines in their fleet. If we can offer eight more, then that's a substantial contribution. So, you know, Paul Keating, I know, has said in the past that Australia's nuclear submarines would be like throwing toothpicks at the mountain. I don't agree with that. I think actually if we can get to eight, then that is a substantial capability we would add to an allied effort. The question, of course, is whether it's in Australia's interest to contribute to that effort. Is, for instance, the security of Taiwan so vital to Australia that we ought to be building our entire Australian Defence Force around a capability that is more or less expressly designed for that contingency?
Sam Roggeveen there from the Lowy Institute. And there's actually another person we thought would be perfect to speak to for this episode, given his one-on-one experience dealing with President Donald Trump.
I'm Malcolm Turnbull. You know, Sydney, prominent Sydney racing identity, former Prime Minister.
And just have a listen out for this former Prime Minister's observations about defence spending. What proportion of our GDP might need to go towards defence in the future if we're to afford the cost of AUKUS?
The submarine deal is so one-sided and so advantageous to the United States that it's hard to see why Trump would not like it. I mean, we are sending $3 billion US to support the American submarine industrial base. We would hope to be able to acquire two, maybe three Virginia-class submarines at some time in the 2030s. But the Americans have no obligation to provide those subs to us at all. It's entirely in their discretion. And in the legislation, so it's part of the deal, it states quite clearly that before any subs would be transferred to Australia, the US president has to certify, among other things, that their Navy does not need them. Now, as at the moment, the submarine industrial base is producing less than half of the number of submarines they need. So for us to have any hope of getting any Virginia-class submarines, the Americans would have to more than double the rate of production in their submarine industrial base. And of course, the circumstances would have to remain such that the president could put his hand on his heart and say, we can sell them without diminishing our undersea capabilities. But so it's a very one-sided deal. And that's why I think it's an unfair deal to Australia. But so we signed up to it.
In your view, it would be justified if Trump wanted to say, we're not giving them to you yet?
Well, the decision to be made as to whether the submarines would be sold to us is to be made 270 days before they would be transferred under the AUKUS legislation. And that is likely to be probably the president after President Trump.
So it doesn't really matter?
Well, it it may not be a decision for President Trump. That's right. But my contention is, my concern is that regardless of whether the president is Trump or J.D. Vance or a Democrat, they will always put the needs of the US Navy first. And of course, that's obvious that they would. I mean, in a sense, they don't need the legislation to spell that out, but it does. You know, so from Trump's point of view, and I know Donald Trump, he's a tough, very transactional, you know, property developer. He will be amazed that Australia signed up to such a dumb deal. It won't win us any respect, but he will say, well, this is great. We're getting billions of dollars from the Australians, and we don't have to provide them with any submarines unless, you know, as the president at the time is satisfied that they are in effect surplus to the US Navy's requirements.
But Malcolm Turnbull, imagine the damage done to the alliance if they did make that, if they did make that decision. I realise it's there.
Well, I don't
but
think
surely
it, I don't
that
think,
would
no.
be like a bomb dropping in the midst of people.
No, I don't. Well, Geraldine, with great respect, I do not agree with that because that's the terms of the deal.
Yeah, I know it's written, but I mean, what would happen to the trust between the two nations
Look, if you could look at, compare us to the sort of the argument I had with Trump over the refugee deal. Mm. So I had a signed refugee deal with Barack Obama to resettle refugees in the United States. Trump didn't want to comply with it. And my point to Trump was to say, look, Australia has a deal with the United States. You're like the new CEO. You've inherited a deal you don't like. You think your predecessor was stupid to go into it. My proposition was you, as the new CEO, have to comply with this deal. It's a matter of honour and trust. We have a bargain and you should stick to it. And we had a huge, you know, like it's a notorious row about it and it was very controversial. But ultimately, though he was extremely unhappy about it and angry, he did stick with it. The thing here is the Americans are able to say this risk of us not being able to spare these submarines is one that was set out in black and white. It's a risk that you, Australia, took with your eyes open.
There's also risk because of the changing strategic environment, right? It's fairly clear the trajectory of the US-China relationship, and we can't escape that because of our geography.
Mm.
Do you see our interests aligning more and more with the United States on this question or less and less?
Well, it depends what the question is. I mean, America is our ally, but China is a friend. We have a, you know, friendly relationship with China. At least we want it to be friendly. It hasn't always been. They're our largest trading partner. There are about 1.5 million Australians of Chinese heritage. You know, we have no interest in some kind of Cold War. I mean, do we want to get into a situation where the Americans say you've got to stop exporting iron ore to China? Do we really want to get into that kind of sort
probably
of trade
not,
wars?
But,
no,
but
probably
we
not.
Probably also say, don't I want say, there to be a conflict in the region.
Not.
What?
We also don't want a conflict in the region. We probably don't want disruption of trading routes in the South China Sea.
No, of course we don't. Of course we don't. We don't want any of those things. And so I've always supported and continue to support the US alliance. It's absolutely central. It's the sheet anchor of our security. But Australian sovereignty is important. Let's say for sure, AUKUS has made us, Pillar One in particular, has made us more dependent on the United States. It has done so at a time when, because of changes in the United States, not least the election of Mr. Trump a second time, the United States has become less dependable. And that is not a bug, that is a feature. Trump is saying, you can't always count on us, you've got to do more yourself.
But unless Australia is going to
throw ourselves further into their lap.
But unless Australia is going to move away from the alliance with the United States being the core strategic underpinning of our security approach to the region, then we have to go in that direction.
That's quite wrong. I mean, because you can be both. You would be a better ally if you are more self-reliant. I mean, I'll give you two examples of American allies. Poland, a NATO ally of the United States, is making massive investments in its own defense industrial base, so that it's able to make the munitions and the the capabilities that it needs as far as they can themselves. So they're seeking to be, they're a strong American ally and they need American support, but they're seeking to be as resilient and independent as themselves.
What percentage of GDP do you think we need to be
spending? Well, we're a bit over
defense.
2%. I mean, I think most people would say that it has certainly got to go over 3, and maybe it's got to go to 4.
What is the best case scenario for us with AUKUS? In your best reasonable, plausible case scenario?
Well, I mean, the best case scenario would be, I suppose, that we get the submarines on time and, you know, the Virginias arrive and the AUKUS SSN program, you know, BAE defies the world by having a submarine program that is, you know, on time, on budget and, you know, I mean, it's like the beauty pageant, you know, winner who says, what do you want? World peace, you know, I mean, yes, of course, I'd love it. I'd love it to happen, but I suspect, well, obviously it won't. I think we need to be clear-eyed about scenario B planning, and the scenario B is what do we do if there are no Virginias supplied and how do we plan for that? We need to ask the question as to whether we should nonetheless, have some conventional submarines. This is all.
It's tough to bring the Australian people along with you while you're just, isn't it?
Well, it is.
When there is finally a debate about this, which is what we're trying to promote.
But you see, this was the wickedness of what Morrison did, right? And the foolishness of what Albanese did in going along with it. There was no proper analysis or debate. I mean, for example, by contrast, the decision to build the submarines in partnership with France was the subject of at least 18-month competitive evaluation process. I mean, analyses and considerations, you know, ceiling high of papers. And so whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision, it was very carefully considered and analysed. What you got with AUKUS was all of that risk is borne by us.
If you were investing money, you would be wary.
Oh, well, you wouldn't. I mean, look, Geraldine, the deal is asymmetric. All Richard Miles can say, or Lloyd Austin, is I'm confident we can get there. Well, that's great, but confidence, you know, is not enough. I mean, as they say, hope, what is hope? Danger's comforter.
Well, a nice poetic line there at the end from Malcolm Turnbull, Gerry.
And the perfect segue to Defence Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles. Now, he says he has agonised over AUKUS and he really believes we have no other choice but to go down this path.
Agonised and wrestled with it greatly in the sense of needing to think about how we have for Australia the defence force that we need in the future to meet the strategic questions and dilemmas that our country is facing. Mm. And
But the risk of this, though, with respect, Richard, is that it absorbs so much of the focus and money that is available for the Australian defence forces that we end up with a fairly imbalanced approach.
Well, I think this needs to be placed in context. Right now, we have a defence budget which is about 2% of GDP going up to 2.3%, 2.4% of GDP over the next 10 years. So that gives you a sense of the size of the defence budget. The submarines represents 0.15% of the 2.4%, if you like. So, you know, it is way less than 10% of the entire defence spend. But when you think about what it provides us in terms of our capability to project, our national security does not lie on the borders of our country. It is not defined by the coastline of Australia because we are not facing a risk of being invaded. What we need to be protecting is our connection to the world, our economic connection to the world. That means our sea lines of communication. We need to be in a stable region in the world. You know, the defence of Australia and the security of Australia is entirely tied up with the security of the Southeast Asia, the Northeast Indian Ocean. We need to be playing our part there. And all of that requires capabilities that can project, and the most significant capability that we will have to project is a long-range capable submarine.
You have to be able to afford it, though, and you've just pointed to the spending plans over the next decade, but folks, including the former chief of the ADF, Sir Angus Houston, has suggested that spending may in fact need to increase further to about 3% of GDP as part of this series. For Radio National, Malcolm Turnbull has also said over 3%, potentially up to 4%, to be able to afford AUKUS and the other things that you are going to have to do to modernise Australia's defence forces. Do you accept that?
I don't accept those numbers. I mean, what I do accept is that we are in a very difficult and changing strategic environment.
But do you accept they have to go higher than the numbers you mentioned earlier, 2.3%, 2.4%?
Well, we are taking it higher. I mean, we're taking it from 2 to 2.4.
But this is a question about beyond that.
Sure, but let's just understand that. I mean, that is itself represents the most significant peacetime increase in our defence budget. So, you know, that is a very, very significant step that we are taking, and that is there. It's not what we've seen in the past during the former government, when Malcolm Turnbull was the Prime Minister, where there was a lot of rhetoric, but there wasn't actually money put forward. This is real money, which is now in the budget, which is taking us to this place, and it represents the biggest peacetime increase that we've really seen since the end of the Second World War.
And
I would say that is a very significant thing to do. So people can bandy around other numbers like threes and fours, but just look at what we are doing. But if you bring it back to AUKUS and the submarines, also put it in context, it is 0.15%. That's what we're talking about.
Dare I ask, is there a plan B if this doesn't unfold as you describe?
There are a whole lot of other capabilities that we are looking at putting place in the Defence Force as well, which give us projection. So when you ask, you know, is there plan B, I mean, it is not right to say all of our eggs are in the one basket in terms of a long-range submarine, as important as that is. As I say, it's 0.15% of a defence budget in 10 years, which will be at 2.4%.
Okay, saying this is the only way that Australia can have effect to any attempt at disruption of the trade routes in the South China Sea, what's the plan B then if we don't get one of these submarines as planned?
That's not quite what I've said, Hamish. What I've said is that the most capable platform that we can have is a long-range submarine. Well, we need to chase the submarine because it is profoundly important.
Okay, but what's the alternative?
Ensuring that we have a much more capable surface fleet, and we've done the surface fleet review, and that's what, you know, we're putting in place. So having a very capable surface fleet is part of the answer. Having much longer-range missiles is part of the answer. So that, again, think about projection, the Guided Weapons and Explosive Ordnance Enterprise, which is something that we have really ramped up such that we will see missile manufacture beginning in Australia from next year. And so if you look through the Defence Strategic Review, it is a coherent statement about the kind of defence force that we need. We are in the process of building it. And yes, the submarines are a really important part of it, but they are only a part of it.
According to the US legislation, though, the president of the day needs to certify the transfer of these submarines is consistent with America's foreign policy interests and would not degrade its own undersea capabilities.
Sure.
Why have we agreed to that, given how much money we're spending?
Well, firstly, that is a statement which America is always going to have in terms of an agreement that they sign.
But it's not a great deal for us, though.
Of course. Hamish, for the second time in history, a country is acquiring this capability from another. And the first time was when Britain acquired nuclear propulsion technology from the United States in the 1950s. This is only the second occasion on which it's occurred. To describe that as not a good deal misses the point entirely. Arguably, this is, you know, the biggest uplift in Australia's military capability probably since the establishment of the Navy in 1913. In terms of, if you think about it, we have never operated in such an elite group before in terms of being one of just seven countries to have such a fundamental capability.
Not just the submarines, right? It is the increasing troop presence as well as hardware presence from the Americans here on Australian soil. And it raises reasonable questions about sovereignty. I know you're saying this strengthens Australian sovereignty, but there are many many significant voices actually that say we're ceding our sovereignty here really because we are making ourselves so interdependent on the Americans.
Well, to go to the wider question beyond submarines, it is true that we are seeing an increased American presence in terms of the marine rotation in Darwin. We are doing cooperation across all domains, land, sea, air, but also space and cyber with the United States. And that is seeing increased personnel in Australia. And the subs is part of it, to be fair, because the Submarine Rotational Force West will see an American rotation, a submarine rotation occurring there as well. Look,
what's led to these comments that Geraldine's referring to about Australia just looking like an American military base.
We have never been clearer in terms of the sovereignty arrangements associated with an American presence in Australia than we are right now. We've been very mindful that if there is an increased American presence here, we need to be making very clear our sovereignty situation and arrangements. So the agreements that we have with America have been extended. We have full knowledge and concurrence. That means that in terms of any American activity which occurs in Australia, we are completely aware of it and have an ability to make decisions in respect of it.
None of that's going to make one iota of difference if China is at war with America. How the Chinese will view it.
Okay, but if I can just... These things are important, so I think they definitely are worth. They are much bigger than what you've just described. We need to be making sure that if there is a presence of any foreign military in Australia, and it's not just America, Singapore, for example, have a very significant presence in Australia, that they do so on terms where we have control and where what is happening in Australia we're completely aware of and we are allowing to occur, and it requires our concurrence and acceptance. And those arrangements have never been more robust, and we've been making sure they are in place with the United States. But if you were to walk down a path of saying we should avoid any kind of American engagement so that we avoid any form of targeting from any other adversary, be it China or anyone else, then what you're talking about is a very different relationship to what we have now, and that is the alliance. Now, one can do that, but that is a description of having a much, much bigger defence expense. I mean, if we're being really honest, and this has been the case from governments since Curtin at the end of 1941, we have had our alliance with the United States, which has been fundamental to our national security and which has enabled us to operate in the way we have. And without it, we would be spending an awful lot more in terms of our own sovereign defence. And the reason why countries go into alliances is precisely to share resources so as to make the expense, the very considerable expense of defending their own nation, one which is shared. And that's what we are doing in our alliance with the United States and in building the other arrangements we do. You know, we have always had a significant partner that we have been allied with.
We know they can fall over too.
Yes, and so we had Britain through until 1941, and when we thought Britain was not able to provide for our defence with the fall of Singapore, we looked to America. Well, that is how we have across the entirety of our history since Federation structured our strategic policy. It is what makes sense. It is how you do defence in an efficient way.
And you can access our entire AUKUS series that we played over summer in 2025, which I think sort of is a primer, as it were, for where we are now. I'm hoping there's going to be plenty more debate. That's my great dream. But our guests have been Malcolm Turnbull, former Prime Minister, Sam Roggeveen from the Lowy Institute, and Richard Marles, our current Defence Minister. We welcome your thoughts. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.